From KTLO in Juneau, I'm Jeremy Shea with this news. Juneau police say a hiker who was reported overdue on Sunday has been found dead. Police in a statement say the body of 63-year-old Douglas Duggar Shockley of Juneau was found this morning in the Dredge Lake area. According to the statement, a preliminary investigation showed no signs of trauma to the body, which will be sent to the state medical examiner's office for an autopsy. Police say that family members reported last hearing from Shockley around noon on Saturday when he said he was going to hike in the area. Police say they received a report that he was overdue the next day. In the latest COVID-19 numbers, Juneau officials report a man in his 60s died at Bartlett Regional Hospital on Friday due to the illness. Three other people are hospitalized with COVID-19. Meanwhile, local public health officials have tentatively scheduled free youth vaccine clinics in Juneau schools beginning next Monday. Registration is expected to open at noon this Thursday, pending a federal approval of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for kids aged 5 to 11. Families will be able to register online at juneau.org/vaccine or by calling 907-586-6000. Clinics next week are planned at the Marie Drake Building, Floyd Dryden Middle School, San Tikihini Middle School, Mendenhall River Community School, and Riverbend Elementary School. Local children can get vaccinated at any site and don't need to be enrolled in the school system. Kids must be accompanied by a parent or caregiver. Flu shots will also be available. The initial supply of the youth version of Pfizer's COVID-19 vaccine for these clinics is expected to be limited to about 1,200 doses. However, Southeast Alaska Regional Health Consortium, local pharmacies, and the Juneau Public Health Center are expected to get additional doses. City officials expect there will be enough to meet demand in the first half of the month. Since Saturday, state data identified 34 new cases among Juneau residents. Statewide, three additional COVID-19 deaths were reported, two from Anchorage and one in Fairbanks. The recent increase in oil prices could lead to the state government getting $1.2 billion in revenue more than expected this year. That's according to a preliminary revenue forecast released by the State Department of Revenue on Friday. The final forecast will be made in December. While the state forecast in March that oil would average $61 per barrel this year, the update forecasts $81. The current price is $85 per barrel. The preliminary report also forecasts an increase in daily North Slope oil production of nearly 30,000 barrels this year compared with the spring forecast. But it forecasts a slight decline in production for the rest of the decade compared with the spring. State says that's due to increased uncertainty for large projects caused by federal litigation and financing issues. Wrangell has joined with a dozen other Southeast municipal and tribal governments in calling for stronger protections from mines in Canada that straddle transboundary watersheds. As KSTK's Sage Smiley reports, Wrangell's Assembly and residents say the issue is especially pressing to the community, which sits in the mouth of the British Columbia-originating Stikine River.
Wrangell's Assembly has unanimously called on Canadian regulators to immediately pause permitting, development, and expansion of mines upstream from Southeast Alaska's waterways. It's also asking the provincial government of British Columbia to permanently ban the practice of storing liquid mine waste behind earthen dams. That's because there aren't financial or legal protections in place for Southeast Alaska tribes and communities that depend on transboundary salmon watersheds. If a mine dam failed in Canada, they argue, the downstream waste could devastate the environment and economy of communities like Wrangell. Wrangell Mayor Steve Prasunka said he's seen firsthand how mines have been abandoned in Canada. In a previous job, he ran canoe trips on the Iskut River near the old Johnny Mountain mine site.
And I'm here to tell you, it was insane. This was shortly after the shutdown, and they literally walked away. We would go into a building, and there would still be the beakers inside the lab with Bunsen burners and rain gear still suspended. It was like they just disappeared. And over the course of 3 years or 4 years, I watched that tailings pond drain down the side of the mountain.
Mining industry publications report that the former Johnny Mountain mine was further cleaned in 2017. But Prasunka's larger point was that it's important to protect Wrangell from legacy pollution. The Stikine River is integral to Wrangell's fishing economy, the work of the community's Marine Service Center, and the traditional lifestyle of the indigenous population. Wrangell resident and artist Brenda Schwartz-Jaeger spoke in favor of the action at the Assembly's Tuesday meeting.
I don't think this community would exist at all if it wasn't for the remarkable richness and bounty of the Stikine. It's a fragile ecosystem.
Schwarzjäger told the assembly she finds it incredible and scary, the size of the tailings upriver from Wrangell. The largest mine operating on the Stikine River watershed is the Red Chris mine, operated by Imperial Metals since 2015. That's the same company that operated the Mount Polly mine that had a tailings dam failure in 2014. The tailings dam, which holds mine waste from the Red Chris mine, is more than twice as tall.
We have a lot to lose, and they kind of have a lot to gain and really not a lot to lose. And I feel like we need a place at the table, and I feel like this resolution will help bring us closer to using the treaty to put some teeth in the agreements.
The Petersburg Assembly recently passed a similar resolution calling on its Canadian neighbors to tighten restrictions on mines along transboundary Alaska watersheds, including the Stikine, Taku, and Yunik rivers. The Mining Association of British Columbia responded with a letter defending its safety record. Reached for comment, the industry group pointed to the October letter that says BC's mine sector has made improvements to tailings dam oversight and safety in the years since the Mount Polly disaster. The Southeast Alaska Indigenous Transboundary Commission is a coalition of 15 tribes that banded together in the wake of the 2014 dam failure. Wrangell tribal citizen Tis Peterman is a former executive director of the commission and said in an interview that they're still working to gain representation as stakeholders in transboundary watersheds.
We feel as tribal members in Southeast Alaska that we should have a voice, because anything that's being done on the BC side on transboundary mining is going to affect downstream communities.
Wrangell's local tribe, the Wrangell Cooperative Association, is a member of SEITC and has already passed a resolution asking for more engagement and protections from the effects of transboundary mines, Peterman said.
It's literally in our back door, out the back door. Look across the back channel. There's Canada.
The years following the Mount Polly mine disaster renewed calls for transboundary mining permit requests to be considered under what's called the International Joint Commission. The IJC was formed under the Boundary Waters Treaty of 1909 and is meant to resolve water disputes between the U.S. and Canada. But Alaska critics say that call for IJC oversight of transboundary mines hasn't borne fruit.
Until we have binding protections in place, we are just sitting ducks below what everybody calls these ticking time bombs.
That's Jill Weitz, the Juneau-based campaign director for Salmon Beyond Borders, one of the organizations that requested a resolution on transboundary mining protections from Wrangell's government.
We're not under the illusion that mining is going to stop or that any of us are going to stop mining in British Columbia. We need some of these resources towards the energy transition that is underway in face of a changing climate. But mining can be done better. It has to be done better.
Earlier this year, the government of BC did invite the tribal consortium SEITC to meet about transboundary mining and other tribal environmental concerns. It was the first such meeting for Southeast tribes. That's in addition to discussions underway with the Tahltan central government on Canada's side of the border about mining safety and Indigenous input in the permitting process. In Wrangell, I'm Sage Smiley.
Tribal leaders, commercial fishermen, and environmental advocates are celebrating a federal court decision that could provide future protections for Bristol Bay against projects like Pebble Mine. The U.S. District Court ruling on Friday allowed the Environmental Protection Agency to officially restart a process to consider permanent protections for Bristol Bay. That reverses a 2019 decision by the Trump administration, which withdrew the EPA's 2014 proposal for protections. Members of the Bristol Bay Defense Fund applauded the court's decision in a virtual press conference today. Deputy Director of the Marine Mammal Protection Project, Taryn Kiko-Heimer, said that the court's ruling is a step closer to permanent protections.
The judge's decision to vacate and remand will reinstate the 2014 proposed determination. And so that kicks us back into the 404C administrative process. When and if EPA finalizes that, it would stop Pebble Mine for good, and it would permanently protect Bristol Bay.
In 2014, the Environmental Protection Agency proposed a preemptive veto of a larger mine in the area under Section 404C based on the agency's Bristol Bay watershed assessment. But it was never finalized, and the Trump administration withdrew the proposal. Alana Hurley is the executive director of the United Tribes of Bristol Bay, a group of 15 federally recognized tribes in the region. Hurley says they are looking forward to working with the EPA to finalize the protections.
We are still very much under threat with the Pebble Mine and mines like it in Bristol Bay. And so, our tribes are not going to rest until these protections are finalized and Bristol Bay is protected for future generations.
The group would like to see the EPA make a decision before next summer. Director Catherine Karskallen of Commercial Fishermen for Bristol Bay says the EPA has a commitment to follow science and the law when making this decision.
And that work has already been done. The agency has already undertaken years of study, and the scientific record is clear and overwhelming. Bristol Bay's tribes and fishermen have spent decades fighting to protect our way of life and livelihoods, and it's time for EPA to finish the job for good and apply the Clean Water Act to veto the pebble mine before the next fishing season.
In 2020, the Army Corps of Engineers denied a permit for Pebble after determining that the plan for the mine would not comply with the Clean Water Act and that the project is not in the public interest. The groups are also calling for congressional action that would further protect Bristol Bay's headwaters. The EPA filed the motion to vacate and remand the Trump administration withdrawal in September. The agency must lay out a schedule, according to federal regulations in the Clean Water Act, before it issues a final determination. That process could last up to 4 months. Southeast Alaska's salmon harvest was over four times more than last year's, according to a preliminary report from the Alaska Department of Fish and Game released today. Commercial fishermen in Southeast harvested 58 million salmon across the five species this year. Almost 7 million chum salmon, 48 million pinks, 1.5 million coho, 1.1 million sockeye, and 216,000 king salmon. That's a marked improvement in harvest for every species. Even the embattled Southeast king salmon had a commercial harvest increase of more than 16,000 fish. In total, commercial salmon fishermen in the region caught and sold 44 million more salmon than last year. Price per pound was also up across all five species this year in Southeast, according to the preliminary report. And finally, 12 bears have been killed in Sitka this year that were deemed dangerous to life and property. Daily Sitka Sentinel reports four of those bears were killed last week. State wildlife biologist Stephen Bethune told the local assembly that Sitka has a garbage problem. He's urging the use of bear-resistant trash cans and electric fences to help deter bears. That is it for the KTOO News Update for Monday, November 1st, 2021. I'm Jeremy Shea. Thanks for listening.